You are listening to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast, a podcast where I interview guests about D&D, miniatures, wargaming, comic books, movies, game conventions, and other nerd-related paraphernalia. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Hi, and welcome to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast. I'm very excited about today's guest, as I can say, without reservation, that he has had a hand in the shaping of our hobby for his entire life. I am, of course, referring to author and publisher Ernie Gygax, son of the late Gary Gygax, and the original Tenser the Wizard.
Hello, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, good. How are you doing, Ernie?
Not bad. Just arranged bunches of snacks for the dog and I, and she's got a... Okay, my dog needs a piece of pizza cheese.
Pizza cheese curds. Oh, sure.
I've never had them yet, but they're effective. They go good with onion and garlic potato chips, and hopefully some teriyaki beef in a little bit.
Sure.
So, I mean, a nice healthy lunch. Gamer proud.
Yeah. My lunch consisted of Monster Energy drink and pepperonis. So.
Well, I'm normally I have a beverage as soon as I get through dog walking, whatever else, and I'm gonna make at least a cocktail or something. Otherwise, my knees are shot. You know, well,
sure.
Plus, it's a cheap excuse, but I use it. I don't get pain pills, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, I used to move furniture for a while.
Yeah.
I had my 14 strength or whatever going.
And that eventually catches up to you, huh?
I have that and also being fat. You know. And I played some.
Sure.
A lot of football, just friendly football, not team or whatever.
Well, I know you've been, I know that GaryCon's coming up.
Yes.
And of course, you've been super busy with GP Adventures and the Hobby Shop Dungeon.
I should have been. I talked to Ben a little bit and I said, get to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of writing. I can tell. I mean, just the maps, the sizes of the maps must be. I mean, they're huge, so the writing must be.
Yeah, yes. So you've actually gotten to look at some of them? Did Ben show you anything? Or?
No, well, yeah. I mean, I've seen the stuff that he's posted. And, of course, I got Gygax Magazine number 3 with the Memorial Tomb.
And that's only half the Memorial Tomb.
Right. And then
he just put out a new piece of material with Tenker's Tavern. And
yeah.
And that's freebie. And also that's also going to be offered to the gentlemen that are coming to GaryCon.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know. That might actually
be
print for that then.
Is that what you're going to run at noon on Saturday?
No, I'm running just a regular hobby shop dungeon.
Okay.
I've already done all the play testing I'm going to do and all that, except for the main product. And this is the thing that it's basically a Howard expanded world, because he just didn't want his itty bitty maps, and especially since a lot of the maps Terry Koontz had originally drawn out and then I changed and then I filled them. So when we were making this as mine, it's, you know, Ben went to town.
Now that's the newest map, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's not changing at all, except that I have another copy that has numbers on it.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, so like the GM's version.
Yeah. And I've got this big carrying case filled with levels. This is level 4, which is our current bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, I don't know if you've ever seen any old stuff, but it's monstrous.
Yeah.
And it has a lot more large areas than the other ones. Level 3... These are all going to be slightly modified because we've made some changes as time goes on. I'm just trying to give you an idea of
the sheer size and complexity of that.
Yes.
Of those maps.
And the whole world of having to draw and map again instead of just sitting at a table and waiting for electronics or whatever to do something or someone pulling out their markers for you. And saying, well, here, kids, I wouldn't want to put you out too much.
Right. Yeah, I actually you ran a playtest at I'm Bored last year in February, I think. I actually played in that one, and I was mapping, and it was a complex map. It turned into it was really cool. There, you know, it was an old giant's tomb.
Yeah,
there was
that's the same thing that's going to be for sale shortly.
Right.
You know, with the bottom level and all that.
Right.
And I think this is level one. Yeah, this is level one, just to give you an idea.
Yeah, it's so complex.
And then level two.
Jeez.
All right.
Yeah, that's great.
My level six is not going to get really changed very much, except that Ben will pretty it up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still going to stay the basic same product, because I actually drew that all, and it took me a whole week for me to just draw it in, just drawing at the hobby shop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because right.
That was the way everything. The Dungeon Hobby Shop, we had plenty of potential extra time. But Frosty the Snowman needs to be tossed since you know Casey.
Casey doing okay?
Oh, yeah. Of course she is. She refuses to be ignored.
So, I got Gygax magazine number 3,
yes.
Right? And I actually got 2 issues so I could take this map out, which is, you know, the first map you guys put out.
Yes.
It's beautiful. And I love how
it's not going to change at all, the top map.
The top map, yeah.
Okay, then there'll be a new second map. And besides that, all the artwork is new. Besides the stuff for down below, we, got Mark Allen to do it for us,
mm-hmm.
because this other art was commissioned only for Gygax magazine. It wasn't our purchase.
Okay.
So, and it was Jim Holloway, and I love Jim Holloway's art, but I was a little unhappy that maybe he just rushed this or whatever, but this was a rare Jim Holloway thing, because I've had everything from St. Patty's Day and birthday things at TSR, just tons of stuff, let alone real art they had to do for work that were done or commissioned for him.
Sure.
So at this point, Mark Allen's artwork, though, is fantastic, and I'm real proud to have him on the team, though he does work for several other companies also.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope that this will help launch him a bit. Though I hope he still has time to work for us.
Yeah.
He's a good old hillbilly that lives close to by me now, but he's from Kentucky, and he plays banjo and a few other stringed instruments as well. Yes, as well as able to just draw art. We give him verbal descriptions, and he puts it and makes it look real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an important part of it. When it looks good.
I just showed, I've got a Simon Todd poster now on my wall.
Okay.
There'll be one more of those offered only at GaryCon.
Right.
Unless, you know, and that's all he's authorized me. He says, one for you and one to help you get the house. And then after that, we can negotiate if we want to do anything with my artwork.
Right. Now, so you've been moving into a new house lately, right?
Recently? Yeah, well, I've been moved in for a bit, though the house has got all kinds of small, it's a small home. It's a one, mm-hmm. well, it's, they call it a 2-bedroom, but this is the second bedroom, my mm-hmm. office.
Sure.
Okay.
It's still in Lake Geneva there,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's by the old place that had the fire. I'm only like a block and a half away from where
right, yeah, that. Was that in 2012?
I think it was,
Yeah, it was 12. That was awful news.
Yeah.
So this this art print is going to be at GaryCon 7, which, of course, is March 26th of this year, right? March 26th and 29th?
Yeah.
2015, down there in...
Simon Todd will be there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Simon Todd from England.
Right.
So not only can someone buy this wonderful poster from me,
uh-huh.
you know, to somehow get this house, but they can also get it autographed, because I have it just as a poster for everybody else. My mm-hmm. copy I've got laminated on foam back and all that. And if I wouldn't, the poster that you've probably seen me with the GaryCon with my dad's picture.
Yes, that okay. huge one. They always show it at GameholeCon.
Okay.
Right.
No, I'm not talking about the Greyhawk. I'm talking about a picture of my dad that's like 42 inches tall, 30 inches wide, and it says, "Welcome to GaryCon 4." That's right beside my chair where I sit and watch TV and all that, or have the orange cat on me. So I'm pretty sure that's like my primary shot when you go into my Facebook. Anyway, it's a Simon Todd. It's another Simon Todd piece of art. And what's amazing with Simon Todd art is that it starts on like 8.5 by 11 or slightly larger, and you blow it up to 42 by 30, and it looks heavily detailed. Mm-hmm. All right? I mean, normally when I was commissioning stuff at TSR or having things done for the Dungeon Hobby Shop or for Gen Con, whatever, we would have these large posters done and shoot them down, you know, to these small sizes, and then they would have all this incredible detail.
Right. It's like forced resolution.
I'm so shocked that Simon's able to do this kind of work, you know, on a small field, and it looks grand.
Yeah, they look really good. So you're in GP Adventures with Benoit, right?
Yes, Benoit, yeah. And, no, looks like Benoist, but he gets upset with you that way. Noir, which is really pear in French. Okay?
So right, well, it's Ben pear. I'm not too proud to say I looked up the pronunciation. But do you know if he's going to be at GaryCon with you this year?
Hopefully. It's not sure, but he's really working on it. You know, I've said that he could room with me, and if he brings his woman, then they can use my home and my bed and whatever. All they have to do is feed the cats and empty the cat litter.
Right.
But they could come to the con. It's only like 4 miles away. But since there's going to be plenty of beverage partaking and whatever else going on, I have a room and
At the hotel. At the convention center hotel, sure.
No more problems ever in life. I've done my two accidents as a younger man. And, you know, when the accidents of getting caught, but still, the idea.
Yeah.
I've been spanked.
Sure. So might as well just room right there at the con so we can go all night long.
It's the only way to continue to have fun. Plus, I go to sleep early.
So you recently released... a children's book, right? Yes. Sammy Zoa versus the Dueling Dragons.
Absolutely. It's a fantastic little piece of work that not enough gamers know about.
Yeah.
I got lots of copies of it, so.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the storyline, you know, about the book?
Sure. And of course, it's filled with Simon Todd artwork.
Okay. So he also does the art for that.
Simon Todd also, yes.
Yeah.
All right. And even on the back... It shows the two brothers. This I did for my two grandsons. Mm-hmm. Now there's more, but it doesn't matter because my wife is dead, and this was their biologically not my blood, even though I love them dearly, and they kind of love me, but the dad has kind of, you know, slipped away when mom's been gone since 2011.
Okay.
All right. But I wrote this when they were still very young, and I used to make the mistake of trying to read them the story that was written by me, kind of a little overly adult, not evil adult, but just too many big words and too long.
Sure, too complex.
And there was all kinds of wonderful pictures that I'd just stolen offline because it was only, you know, for our, you know, the children at the time. And they would be sitting in my lap. And, of course, the older brother was... is a really cool one. The younger brother never leaves him alone. Is a little pest that follows him around. That sort of typical thing.
Sure.
Ben's fiance, Narissa Monte, cut my wording down in half, and it was painful.
It's hard to. Yeah, she's the editor, huh?
Yeah, she sliced away huge sections and things like this, trimmed things, but. Uh-huh. The children all the time when they were sitting in my lap as I was reading to them, and they would say, "Let's see the next picture."
Right.
"Let's see the next picture." And but I'm only halfway through, you know, so, and even then it's still dangerous. So This is probably more aimed at a 8 to 11-year-old audience.
Okay.
Okay, though
sure.
It's still enjoyable for an adult, but it's an easy read.
Right.
But it's got lots of good artwork.
Good for a gamer's kids,
yes,
I would say.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm trying to see if there's anything that I can that reads well. You know, my introduction, I don't know. Fellow storytellers, this is my story written many ages ago when I had but two grandsons. They were not used to any real books, let alone adventure stories. My job was to take these young fellows and open their imaginations to the possibilities of what would be in a world set in a fantasy feudal Japan. Yet with all the real actions and activities of our own real lives, including grandma and grandpa, and the way it felt, the way it would feel in a southeastern Wisconsin in Japanese clothes.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
You know, I've got them being Bear fans, you know, and all this kind of thing. Okay. Even though the game is vastly different than American football and all this. The struggles that mother and dad go through. And yet, you know, there's so much love, but it's so tough because they were experiencing issues a little bit in their own home where there was money problems and like most families that causes some disturbance. Then we got around to, I gave them like a code of Bushido and the actual strong breakdown where I had Sammy talking to Laz and as they're going on saying all the wonderful things that have happened and been done, using what they've been brought up with. And basically it's the idea of honor, integrity, you know, protecting those you love, etc. We go back in time and, the old ancestor that got them this like magical sword that'll show up later is Gary Obi. Okay, so it's my dad and whatever, but it's supposed to be, you know, several generations back. And Gary Obi originally was doing his job by just being a merchant. And he was walking along with his huge cart filled with sake. When all of a sudden he hears, you know, sounds of some sort of difficulty, whatever, he investigates. And he could just keep on going along, but instead he sees a young lad all tied up and all these nasty, ogre-ish characters, you know, getting a cooking pot ready and slicing vegetables.
Sure. The telltale sign of trouble on the horizon.
Yeah, so the artwork of Simon Todd is incredible, but the picture up in this upper corner of the two ogre magi wives, you know, gossiping and slicing up things as they're getting ready to, you know, figure out how to boil alive.
Sure.
So anyway, Gary Obi smashes a keg of sake against a tree where a couple guards can hear it. And they can sniff and they smell the air. And before you know it, they're getting loaded off the truck or, you know, the wagon. And then all the others show up angry at them for not being on watch. But then when they notice it's Saki, everybody starts having a huge party. And then that's when my ancestor is able to sneak in there and free the poor fellow that's. And he finds that he's not able to move, blah, blah, blah. He figures out how to release him from the spell and finds out that he's really an emerald dragon.
Oh.
A young emerald dragon. Well, so they establish this friendship. And the emerald dragon maintains this friendship throughout. Of course, it's not a good thing for the drunken, sleeping ogre magi. The dragon... after being ready to be a meal, doesn't, you know, he figures out. But anyway, this establishes a long traditional relationship. And even as Gary Obi passes on, the dragon, of course, having a much longer life, continues to watch over and assist the family, even though it's not being done openly. You know, if they're having trouble getting enough to eat, they'll put some squash or whatever in the field. Oops, there's, you know, oh, look at that. There was a gold coin hidden somewhere, you know, by where the plow, you know, this kind of thing. But he ends up finding that young Sammy Zawa has true skills and actually can notice when he's whispering things into his ear, and that he seems to have more power like the great ancestor than like, okay. So at some point, the story goes on and on. There's a couple, for whatever reason, a couple red dragons set fire to basically Lake Geneva. They're having family difficulties. We don't find it out till later. You know, but so they're flying around spraying flame and whatever. And it's apparently that the female doesn't trust that the male is staying home to watch over the eggs and doing all this. But and they lived in Burlington, which is Burlsaka, which is a close town. And all these other peasants are running along, you know, from the fire. And then all of a sudden, he's the Emerald Dragon has fed information. I know I'm probably whatever little pearls you can find amongst all this chaff here. But the idea is that the little boy knows that Grandpa's still alive, and so's Grandma. Even though everybody else has fled from the village, says they. You should have seen the old fool trying to, you know, pulling out the sword and trying to fight with the dragon. And all this sort of thing. So, Sammy finds a horse running loose, jumps on it, rides to, you know, the scene of the accident, goes through some of the ashes and burned remains, and finds, and all of a sudden is growled by the family dog, who might, when they were being raised as a kid, this is pre-KC, there was this chocolate little dog that was named Hershey. So this dog is named Coco. And Coco seems to have been guarding the house and whatever. So he finds a few rations and he's able to quickly swallow some of whatever else. He finds that Coco has been guarding the family sword then he, you know, gets back on the horse and charges off towards where the dragons came from.
Right. With now the family sword.
Yes.
Ready to take care of business.
That's right. Okay. And all sorts of things happen. And he gets to, you know, of course he doesn't, the dog, he doesn't, there's a nice shrine that's just below. He goes in the cave mouth after climbing up this mountainside, and he gets to hear this all this stuff going on and watch this, the male dragon go rushing by him as he's hiding behind a, you know, rock outlay. Mm-hmm. And then the female charges behind him. You blah, 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 as off they go to continue their bickering. And then he goes in and finds that there's all these sleeping little baby dragons all together. And above them, all kind of wrapped up in some sort of material that the dragons put out, whether it's, I don't remember at this point, whether it's like a wax or whatever, but Grandma and Grandpa are like cocooned above the dragons against the wall with, you know, with their head and arms hanging out for when the baby dragons get up the energy to go out there and start munching.
Jeez.
So, his job, he goes and rescues Grandma and Grandpa. And then he's got this decision as these young dragons are there, you know, because he could slay them. They're so small.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, you know, he thinks about what he's been taught, but, you know, never to kill those, you know, that can't defend themselves. And so there's a little moral message.
Sure.
And this actually saves him because when it comes down to it and the dragons come back, they get to see that they're young or still alive and in a compromising position.
Right.
And of course, as Grandpa's leaving, he sees a pile of treasure and grabs his big, beautiful staff. And the staff starts screaming, "Help! Help! Help!" And gets the dragons back. So, but you know, Grandpa and treasure and that kind of thing. I did teach the children for the one Christmas that I really, really, I had a couple Christmases with them, but the one time I really had this, I had all these presents, and instead of just doing it and wrapping them up, I gave them a D&D game. And this was all this treasure, and they had to somehow figure out how to get into this ogre, a series of like ogre's caves, or overcome the monster, mm-hmm. and somehow figure out how, once that had happened, how to get into his treasure area. And there was, the one way was you have to go through the rest facility room that was piled with yuck, but it'd be loose stones, or else if they searched the walls, they could find the secret door that the ogre himself used to get in there, and all that. And then of course there was this giant snake that they were fighting that was, you know, living with the treasure. Mm-hmm. And then there was three boys then. There was actually three grandsons at the time. And the little one, little Dominic, because it goes Sammy and Lazarus and Dominic. And while Sammy and Lazarus are fighting the giant snake, I go to Dominic, "Do you want to help your brothers here? You can get in an easy attack. Or, you know, or else." And I, on the couch, I've got all this treasure piled up. You know, there's a giant snake that they're supposedly fighting, but there's also all kinds of things.
Sure.
And so, "Dominic, what do you want to do? Do you want to go over to the things, or do you want to help your brothers fight the snake?" "I'm going to go grab..."
He's the rogue.
So he went running over, and that's when I moved aside the pile, and I had a bunch of little snakes. Uh-huh. So he had to have a battle, and he was actually bitten and knocked unconscious and would be dying, but one of his brothers was a cleric type.
Sure.
That could, after they were able to rescue him. And for that, he got, then depending on how well they fought and how smart they were, they got modifications. Like Sammy got like a plus 15%. His brother Lazarus got like a plus 8%. And Dominic got like a minus 5% for being greedy and all.
Right. For being the thief.
And, you know, then they got to roll percento dice. And then there was like 13 treasures. And then first pick, second pick, third pick, over and over and over again. And they didn't always just take the most valuable treasures. They were, you know, they were just grabbing things that really seemed to be, to really young men,
yeah,
to be cool and valuable. Yeah. So yeah. That was surprising to me, how the monetary value really wasn't of any, you know, to these youngsters. As much for how much fun this would be to play with right now.
Sure.
In the immediate. Yeah. So that's pretty much a lot of the book. The book is $15, available from GP Adventures.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you really took your kids through, or your grandkids through, some legitimate adventuring.
Yes. It was made up in a very simple method.
Sure. But it still has that theme to it, for sure.
I mean, now, is that... it's like three. What, the littlest guy was like 3 years old, so...
Oh. Well, how old were you when you started gaming with your father?
Oh.
If I'm not mistaken, you're the original Tenser. Is that right?
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so... Yeah,
and so, but the first gaming wasn't role-playing. It was...
Yeah.
It was board gaming, Chinese checkers...
Sure.
And then, you know, chess, and miniatures, gaming with Airfix figurines...
Yeah, you had like a war gaming table, like a sand table in your basement?
That happened later, but first of all, we just used our dining room table.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd also go down to visit Jeff Perrin. Mm-hmm. By the time I was like 8 years old or so, we were going down to visit Jeff Perrin, mm-hmm. who just got enough money to be able to move in with his daughter and family so that he can live in their basement.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the stair, the stair device.
Because
that's great.
Yeah, and he'll be at GaryCon.
Oh, good.
Okay, good. So hopefully you'll see him there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll be there on Saturday and Sunday.
All right. I'm going to start writing a game on Wednesday for the
pre-Gary Kahn game?
Yes. Well, there'll be a couple, but Cliff Gold paid into the auction last year to be able to get a game with him and any friends he chooses. Okay, and so it's set up for like Wednesday noon, and then a few other people's as they fly in will get to join in.
Sure.
But he'll be party caller and whatever. Maybe even have an extra level over the other guys or something, like the guy organized the adventure.
So Gary Kahn's gotten really big every year, and is it the biggest so far this year? Have you heard any numbers about growth?
I think it may be about the same size.
As Gary Kahn 6?
Which is wonderful to me. The idea was to have a small, wonderful little convention.
Yep.
And that's part of what broke off Nexus away from us.
In Milwaukee.
Yeah, but Nexus was, the gentleman at Nexus wanted a big, giant, profitable, he wanted to go to war with Gen Con someday.
Sure.
And we'll see if and what happens with that. But he was much more profit-oriented. Not that profit isn't bad. A small, but the idea is to for everybody to be able to have fun and to encourage all old kinds of old friends. And also, every year we're losing people.
Yeah.
Every year we're losing another gamer friend. Okay, and we lost Hoyer last year. So Gary Kahn was like the last time anybody really saw him. He died just a couple months after that. It's a scary. I had a heart attack a little over a year ago.
That's right.
Well, hopefully things are doing much better. And especially anybody who wants to meet old school and old time, guys that were around, because Frank Mentzer and others, he came on late, like 1980 or so.
Right, late. As late as 1980. So Gary Kahn, it's the clock is, if you want to get, game and with all your old buddies, you got to do it.
Yeah, or even meet some of these.
Yeah, meet these guys, for sure. And now you guys are going to, some of you are going to Gamehole Con as well.
Yes.
How did you get involved in going to Gamehole Con? Is that just like 6 months? So you can do it twice a year, or?
Well, what happened with Gamehole Con is that Alex Kammer, who was the primary leader of this, but yet his staff of they're not employees, but let's say the gentlemen that all help with this,
right, the volunteers,
are all hardworking, total sharing, all this. So Alex had the finances, the toys to start with, and also had the club.
Yeah.
Okay. He said, let's have a big game. And so they came to Gary Kahn for a tutorial. And my brother and Dale gave them like freedom to wander. Of course, they had to do some of the work too, but the idea was they could be behind the scenes. They could go into the employee-only area. They could
hang out. See how it works.
They got to be with all the nuts and bolts and everything of the operation. They went on, and then they went on to polish and make a few improvements, possibly even. Mm-hmm. So Gamehole Con is just as good, I have to say, as the convention that I'm part of, Gary Kahn.
Well, you're definitely a part of Gamehole Con.
Well,
I mean...
Yes.
You're up there.
Okay,
you're...
but I'm actually 10% or whatever of Gary Kahn when it comes to what's the financial.
Yeah, your investment in Gary Kahn and your,
yes, I have...
having to organize it and stuff.
Well, yes, I'm part of. I'm Luke is the majority stockholder or whatever of Gary Kahn LLC.
Sure.
It was started originally as just a nonprofit, and then at some point that disappeared, and redid the paperwork and all this.
Right, yeah, I mean, to be able to support it, because even though it's still is pretty small and you can still meet everyone there, it still is growing, right? It still has a few people trickle in every year at least.
Yeah, and that's why I don't know how to somehow keep it down. I'd rather keep it the size it is if at all possible, I don't know whether that means once it's signed up for, it's it. But walk-ins are so important too. I don't know. Maybe you have more of them. Maybe you have a Gary Kahn summer or whatever.
Right. Well, that's the constant challenge is to how to maintain or limit growth, but not limit the fun that's had, right? Because the better you make it, it's going to grow without you even doing anything.
Sure.
Just word of mouth is going to get out, and it's going to, and then you get a chance to meet more people that have neat ideas.
Then if you start having it multiple times a year, like we used to do with the three mini cons for TSR. Gen Con was the one big one, but then we also had Winter Fantasy, Summer Revel, mm-hmm. and Autumn Revel, I think, also.
Right, that would be a good way to do it, because Gen Con, for example, is way too big. It's not much fun to go to.
No.
Because it's huge, and you're just lost in a sea of humanity, you're one person, and...
Milwaukee was still kind of fun, but I think that Parkside was about the tail end of it being fun still. I mean, really, Parkside University, when it was run there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when it was at Horticultural Hall, it was wonderful. And we would have movies every night with Jeff Perrin with his movie projector,
mm-hmm.
showing Zulu or Culloden or Tora, Tora, Tora. These are all fresh, pretty new movies in those days, if you understand.
Wow, yeah.
Okay.
Tora, Tora, Tora being new.
Zulu Dawn. all sorts. Culloden, you probably never even heard of as a movie. It was a BBC show that was probably done with no more than 50 or 100 actors or something. But wow. So they somehow had to try to... Well, the same sort of thing that Sean Bean had to go through a little bit when he was doing the Sharps Rifles.
Uh-huh.
Where, suddenly, here's this regiment or whatever.
Yeah.
You just have to expand your mind a little.
Right. So when TSR was doing those four cons, or three cons a year...
besides Gen Con.
That was like the early 1980s, right? Like around the time of... So when the D&D cartoon was on the air in like 1983...
That was after these had been
after these had...
for ages.
Right.
Okay, these still were running at like the Legion Hall and whatever. So this was late 70s.
Still right. Still kind of university tied.
Yeah. The American Legion Hall in Lake Geneva we used a lot.
Okay.
Also, okay. And one Gen Con, we had both the Legion Hall and Horticultural Hall at the same time, as well as part of this church area next across the alley. And shame on me, I can't remember the name, but it was basically you just went across the alley and went into the basement. We had the basement where now they do like NA meetings and things.
Yeah.
Okay. But
it still works. Still works as a gaming site.
There was a lot of smoking back in those days. People, there was ashtrays on all the tables and things. That's what the youngsters don't. They look at the old pictures and say, look at that, he's smoking in a public building.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny that things like Mad Men, like that show, one of the big things that people can't believe is how much smoking goes on in the show, right? They're just trying to represent what it looked like back then. So in the 1980s, you worked on the D&D cartoon.
Yes.
Is that right? You were creative controller?
I came on cartoon number 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then I moved to California.
Were you in Los Angeles then?
No, before that I had been in, I never lived in Los Angeles.
Okay.
I always lived in Beverly Hills in the Dungeons and Dragons.
Well.
Oh, let me tell you, there'll be a business card or two that'll be available at the auction to try to help me get this card. I still have a few of them. And the Dungeons and Dragons Entertainment cards. 1636 Summit Ridge Drive. Ernie Agax, Vice President Creative. So I went from an Executive Vice President in charge of Consumer Services to a vice president at DDEC. Okay. And kept the same pay, same company car. I had to drive it up to California from here. Mm-hmm. But I got to live in a mansion.
Right.
With 10-acre estate in Beverly Hills.
Oh, that's not too bad.
No. With a pool and a hot tub. And my dad had a giant sand table commission there. And pictures of that are actually in my photo albums. Have you ever dug through my Facebook albums?
I've seen the sand table.
Yep, that's from
that's that one, huh?
That's not the one on our 330 Center Street. Is the Dungeons and Dragons sand table.
Nice. I wanted to ask you a couple questions about specific spells, if you don't mind. The ones that have Tensor's name attached to them. Now, did you think of those or
no? Tensor's transformation was created because I was always fighting. And my dad, that's part of why, as a magic user, why he had to change so many rules or chose to try to differentiate the classes. Because I was just trying to hurl spells and then get in there and still bash it out with everything.
Pick up a quarterstaff and smash it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I generally got a magic item. I was playing often. I played the most. Rob Kuntz played almost as often as I did. And most everybody else was fortunate they got in even half as much play.
Right.
All right.
What about Tensor's floating disc? Was that just...
Again, it's something that of my greed.
Right, just trying to carry out enough treasure.
Floating or even taking like a body and putting, you know, filling backpacks and dragging it with a couple of us or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. This kind of, so no, I created the cold spell.
Cone of cold?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Right. That was my spell. And that was originally made as a third level spell. And my dad, at some point, because I was so tired of having my items destroyed or having backlash against myself with spells. So I created a spell that was just, you know, forward and no backlash. So then at some point, after he upped it to fourth level. And then by the time things were coming along, he said, the heck with it. You don't have any chances of really hurting yourself. Unless you're stupid, you get to keep all the magic items except for some potions and things that might get destroyed by bottles.
Yeah.
Otherwise, as long as you let everything thaw out.
Yeah, it doesn't damage the treasure on the guy you're hitting.
Yes, or the magic items either. That's,
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So it was originally like an answer to Fireball for you at third level, where you don't hurt yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
It didn't have enough of a negative connotation for the caster, so they upped the level.
Yes, that's exactly what happened to it.
That's funny.
And I also created the Water Weird.
Really? That monster that always pulls us into the fountains?
Yes, and also can control your water elementals if you're using them in the water somewhere.
Yeah.
But see, I used to have to draw the dungeon geomorphs and also make up the monster and treasure lists for my dad.
Okay.
And, you know, when I was through doing the shipping department work at TSR, which was small then. Okay. I was a shipping clerk until I graduated high school. And then after that, I was working the dungeon hobby shop. First, I started working for Terry Kuntz, and he, after a while, left. And then my dad hired Tom Wan to teach me responsibility, which is the absolute most silly thing in the world. And he, also Jeff Perrin later. He kept on trying, you know, you're a young man and, you know, increase your work habits. He kept on hiring people that had worse work habits than I did. They're great guys, great gamers and great artists and minds.
Sure.
Tom, what, we opened up at like 11 o'clock in the morning, and many a time there'd be a call where I'd have to come in if I was available or else somebody else, because there'd be people waiting up front, the hobby shop, because Tom was late. You know, 11 in the morning, and he, you know, just...
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we get too far in, I'd like to do, and I do with every one of the guests on the Vorpal Chainsword podcast, the Vorpal Chainsword Quiz Blast, where I ask you 7 questions, and you just answer them as quickly as you can.
Okay.
With your best answer, okay?
Gotcha.
You ready?
Sure.
All right. So, 1d6 carrion crawlers or 3d12 sturges?
Rather fight the sturges.
All right. Who is your favorite character from the D&D cartoon?
Eric.
Steampunk or cyberpunk?
Steampunk.
All right. What is your favorite magic item as a dungeon master?
As a dungeon master. That's so different.
It is, yeah.
Super intelligent sword with a purpose.
Oh, cursed sword. All right. Or
not cursed.
Just intelligent with an ego.
A huge ego and a special purpose.
Right. All right. Well, what is your favorite magic item as a player?
Had to be my Staff of Wizardry.
Staff of Wizardry, yeah. All right. Your preferred attribute generation method, 3d6 in order or 4d6 drop the lowest?
And 46 assign anywhere. Drop the lowest.
46 drop the lowest. And finally, which is the better movie? The 1981 movie Dragon Slayer or the 1983 movie Deathstalker?
Deathstalker.
Yeah, Deathstalker.
I love Deathstalker.
Yeah, that's a good one. Wow. So Eric, Benton. I'm surprised you choose Eric from the D&D cartoon, but
Arby Benton, num num num.
Yeah.
Oh, nice titties.
Yeah. So steampunk.
Yeah. Nice. Again, girls dress up better.
Sure.
The D&D characters, if you didn't notice them, the girls had thigh boots and stuff like that.
Sure.
Eric, right. He was a lot more fun than Presto. Presto was a bumbling, Bobby was just a little kid, you know.
Right.
I don't generally pick a female in any role-playing game.
No?
No. I don't pick the heroic, you know, Hank.
Right. He's too vanilla, right? He's too obvious.
You know.
Now, Eric had the shield, right?
Yeah.
He was the cavalier.
He was selfish.
He was
whiny, not friendly. Greedy. Yep. Yeah, he was fun.
That's hilarious. I was going to guess that you were going to choose Deck of Many Things or the Wand of Wonder as the Dungeon Master, but the Intelligent Sword has a lot more long-term implications.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. It's going to be where you're going to, at some point, the character that's got some damage on him, whatever else, he's going to be going around, I am sword.
Right. Yeah.
We must kill all undead. Charge! He can do 4x damage or triple damage against undead. Doesn't matter.
Right.
He's still going to be charging undead.
Right. Oh, you're extremely wounded? Well, you still have to charge in to the undead. And with all those bonuses, it won't matter. Yeah. All right. Well, is there anything that you're working on or you know about that you feel like should have a wider audience than it does right now? You know, maybe causes or Kickstarters or books working on or anything.
I'm just going to selfishly just say GP Adventures.
Yeah. GP Adventures.
You know,
I'm very excited to see what comes out. You know, when these things become, purchasable. I know Halls of the Beggar King, the preview's purchasable. Do you know when that one, do you have any idea when that one would be?
No, because we're going to come out with the Hobby Shop dungeon before mm-hmm. Beggar King's polished up.
Sure.
So the very first thing is going to be Memorial Tomb, mm-hmm. and we're only waiting for like two quarter page art pieces now. And Ben's final edit.
Oh, wow. And then it's
going to be,
wow, so it's close.
Yes, and that's going to be a Kickstart.
And okay.
Also, though, I want to bring up that I've got a product coming out with Luke through Trollords.
Yeah?
And it's the revised Castle and Crusades Lost City of Gaxmore.
Whoa, yeah, the one that came out in 2002?
Yes, like, only this is a revamped Castle and Crusades, cleaned up, and that's going to be offered, or at least play tested at GaryCon, and then people will be able to sign up for the Kickstarter that's immediately following.
Oh, wow.
Through Trollords. Yes.
Yeah, The Lost City of Gaxmore. I forgot to ask you about that, but that's great that there's a new one going to come out, or a revised edition of that.
To be set for a more real D&D. The other was 3.5. So right. I wrote in first edition, they had to try to make it 3.5. They did okay. Lots of guys said, they don't really play 3.5. You can tell.
Yeah. Do you ever play 3.5, or did you ever really give, you know, do that?
Only when we were playtesting that, and then my brother was running it. And I was I was playing a magic user, Mustafa Kamel, or Mustafa something. And so I was a big, fat, ugly guy with a turban. Hmm. And I had a my familiar was a bat. His name was Saddam.
So you're just sticking with a theme. Definitely going with a theme.
We'd run around, and we'd have games of up to 19 or 20 characters playing.
At once?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've run up to 22.
In a 3.5 game, though, that can get really... That can drag. Well, I mean, you know, it can get crunchy, right? There's just so many. Did the combat take forever, or no?
A lot of it was combat.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. And but what was cool is that there was, in the Lost City of Gaxmore, there's plenty of opponents that could kick your ass if you're not going to try to be smart, not make negotiations, not be sneaky. Anybody that just walks in, say, in charge is going to be re-rolling lots of characters, and they think they'll be in a Tim Cast game. Yes. I don't like total party kills. I try to avoid that if at all possible, but if people are really stupid, then that'll happen, but it's very rare. My adventure when I took 22, the largest group I ever ran, these were all sailors from Great Lakes Naval Base in 1978. Mm-hmm. They went in the original hobby shop dungeon before some of this upgrading and cartography improvements, or whatever you want to say, from Ben. And these 22 guys started out, and we started with like two cases of beer and several pizzas, and we shut down the hobby shop. And they all came in around like 7 o'clock or so, but I had to keep the store open until 9. And so then a bunch of them could come behind the counter at my little office, and I had a TV back there, and we'd watch Wonder Woman was fresh in those days.
Okay. Yeah, that.
To watch Linda Carter.
Wonder Woman.
And then, you know, we couldn't have beer or anything until the store was closed. But as soon as the store was closed, all that was cool. So you had 22 guys around a couple, two, three tables, and they're actually overflowing out into the sales floor. And we'd run that and have probably like breaks every 3 hours. And then at least twice during the night, I would take a little break and open up the store again. And each gentleman, it was important to help keep this happening. And I was even getting paid to run it, which, you know, I was a kid, just like 17, 18.
Right, yeah.
And so I'm getting my pay to run D&D, which I've always enjoyed. And each guy averaged over $100 in 1978, you know.
Oh, wow.
So I had the record-setting day of any, you know, that night after hours, not counting the regular.
Right. After hours, you somehow earned
$2,200 and up, you know, and at $1,978 or whatever.
Yeah.
And by 9:30, 10 o'clock, because 10 o'clock was supposed to be opening. So by the time that the regular store was opening and another person was going to take over the store, I had to have everybody out, or at least getting ready to go. There was only 3 survivors out of the 22, but they were all 1 point away from third level, which is all you could ever do in the old game. You only increase one level and 1 point away from the next. They each had a fairly cool magic item and maybe a potion or two and things like this. But there had been a trail of slaughter throughout. They got up and survived, and they ended up bringing all kinds of other gamers in, and the crew would change a lot, but these 3 guys always showed up, and they ended up kind of like being the dominant fellows. They even cleared off my first level at one time and put up grills and doors and stuff so they could control access to most of the dungeon unless someone could find other entryways and things.
More recently, have you run any large games or any games with like 5th edition D&D, like the very latest version that came out? Which everybody says is very similar to old school, I'm not entirely convinced of that, but
no, I know what I'm decent at.
Yeah, and yeah, AD&D, it's
mine's
it's so
really
fun.
Kind of a combination of OD&D with some AD&D added, because that's how I learned everything. Was we were adding new elements before, mm-hmm. you know, I started with the three books, just with like 20 typewritten pages or something.
Yeah.
Okay, from Dad. And then as he added new things and whatever else, because everybody started with a 6-sided die for hit points to start with. Okay, there was.
And damage was 6-sided too, right? Or no?
For a little while.
Yeah.
And then that changed. And we even tried for a little bit having different weapons versus different armor types.
Right. Different damage for that, or different armor class modifiers?
Armor class modifiers. And yeah.
Did you ever really play with weapon speeds that much?
No.
No. Yeah, that gets a little it gets a little crunchy.
Again, when the game stops being fun, and then it's so no. That's why I never have liked rule intense.
Yeah.
Okay. And if there's a question, refer to the DM. Offer an opinion, but then the DM makes the rule.
Right. And it just that keeps it going. There's no slowdown in that case.
A
not refer
DM
to the DM's guide. Refer to the
party.
DM.
He's trying to entertain the party, make them think, reward good play, spank poor play, whatever.
Yeah. That's a good general rule for D&D.
Yes, if not playing D&D. Itself, right? Reward behavior. Punish.
Negatively reinforce bad, or negatively punish.
Yes, I grew up where they could actually take, I'd have to go off and pick a switch off the lilac bush to get myself whooped or whatever as a kid. Okay, so.
Oh.
Okay, it's not.
So you're familiar with
Spock.
Yeah. Reward and
very
punch.
Bad boy.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast.
Good. And I'll see you at GaryCon.
Yes, I'll see you at GaryCon.
All right.
All right.
Good gaming.
Yep, you too.